Chapter 18, Freedom in the Truth, by A. Lauren Smith. If you continue in my word, then you are truly disciples of mine, and you will know the truth, and the truth will make you free. John 8:31 and 32. The year 1979 found Germany in the icy grip of the Cold War. Communist East Germany had sequestered its citizens behind a boundary of barbed wire, minefields, sniper towers, and a 12-foot-high, 103-mile-long concrete barrier known as the Berlin Wall. This border proved quite effective in preventing most East Germans from crossing over into West Germany. But what steel and guns could impose on the body had no real power over the minds set on liberty. Many answered the call of freedom that beckoned from the West, and many risked and lost their lives in pursuit of the dream that lay just a few miles away. Of those whose spirits soared with thoughts of liberation were the Streltsik and Wetzel families. After watching an East German television program on the history of ballooning, Peter Streltsik, an aircraft mechanic, and friend Gunther Wetzel tied their hopes of escaping to the West on a bold plan. They would float across the border in a hot air balloon. The two men built a square cast-iron platform to which they bolted four propane cooking gas cylinders used to fuel the makeshift burners. Posts were constructed at each corner of the platform as anchor points for the balloon that their wives stitched together from 60 different pieces of canvas and bedsheets. These items were purchased at different locations so as not to arouse the suspicion of the authorities. By the early morning hours of July 4th, everything was ready to go. The two families, eight souls in all, including the children, made their way through the forest shadows to a meadow about 25 miles from the border. First, the balloon was unrolled and attached to the platform. Then the burners were fired up. Little by little, the heated air inflated the hand-stitched billows, and gradually the teetering bulb of bedsheet and canvas swelled into the night air. The winds were a little stronger than ideal circumstances would provide, but they had come so far, and all was working according to plan. The balloon was holding, the tanks were full, the burners blazed, and the mission remained undetected. They had to go for it. Freedom was holding out its hands. Up they rose into the swirling blackness. Burning much fuel in the fight to maintain control of their homemade craft in the stiff wind. Mile by gut-wrenching mile, the balloon grudgingly drifted toward West Germany. But every drop in altitude required another burst of flame from the burner, and every burst meant another chance to be seen by the East German security forces. Finally, the tanks gave up their last vapors, and the balloon began to sink irreversibly toward the earth and whatever else might be waiting for them. Despair gnawed away at hope as they sank silently back into East German territory, the border taunting them just a short distance away. But there was a silver lining. Their attempted escape had gone undetected. Everything was hastily packed up and smuggled back home. The quest for freedom had been delayed, but would not be stopped. Liberty called louder than any danger they faced. A week later found the two families back at the meadow, this time with favorable winds. The balloon was inflated and everyone climbed aboard. A glowing swell of sheets and canvas swung them up into the night sky. The craft managed to reach 8,000 feet, but as they neared the border, they began to lose too much altitude. Suddenly, an East German security searchlight flashed across the balloon. All breathing stopped, and time stood still. No doubt this would mean mobilization of the police. In silent agony, they awaited the return of the light. But mysteriously, it never returned. 10 minutes passed. Peter's eyes strained to pierce the gloom beneath the gondola. At 100 feet off the ground, he began to make out what looked like farming equipment, but it didn't look like any machinery he was used to seeing in East Germany. At 15 feet, the gas ran out, and the balloon dropped rapidly, crashing into a blackberry thicket. No one was 100% sure if they had gone far enough west. Scrambling to their feet, the two families raced into a nearby barn and hid. Could they celebrate? Or were the police just seconds away from storming in? But exultation finally burst upon them after an Audi was spotted, an automobile made exclusively in West Germany. It was a positive sign. They had flown far enough. What a sight to behold, as the two exuberant families spilled out into the barnyard. They had done it. They were free. God has placed a very high priority on freedom, and its principles are so important that He created our very fibers to resonate with and call out for it. Yet the kind of liberation these two families found after escaping into a freer society only just begins to open our understanding to the kind of freedom God intends all of us to experience. God's purpose is not merely to free our bodies, but also to free our minds from the damage sin has caused. In response to this emergency, God has put into motion a great rescue plan involving the healing of our minds and the restoration of the freedom that comes from being united with Him in a trusting friendship. But sometimes God's plan for us gets lost in the noise of life. As members of the human race, we find ourselves born into a broken and sinful world. We get tied up, trapped, and enslaved by all sorts of things and passions. When self calls, how easy it is to answer. And the more we answer, the louder it calls out. It's a wearying and futile cycle. According to John, it is sin and rebellion that enslave us and take away the freedom that God originally intended for us. For everyone who sins is a slave of sin. The lament of Isaiah is suitable to our condition. What sorrow for those who drag their sins behind them with ropes made of lies, who drag wickedness behind them like a cart. Have you ever felt as if you're dragging your past around like a rickety cart? Have you ever given up in despair, hopelessly tied up in cords of sin? Have you ever felt like the things of this world have captured and imprisoned your soul behind a barbed wire-laced wall? Do you long to be lifted into friendly territory? In a name, there is hope. That name is Jesus. And He says to you today, don't be afraid, for I am with you. Don't be discouraged, for I am your God. I will strengthen you and help you. I will hold you up with my victorious right hand. Created to be free. God never intended the human race to experience the pain and suffering that has come through sin. We were created in God's own likeness, and He, as the author of freedom, designed our existence in accordance with principles of freedom. His plan was that we should always experience the liberation that comes from knowing and trusting Him as our loving Heavenly Father. But when sin entered this world, distrust clouded our view of God. Satan succeeded in introducing into our thinking a vile image of God, a God who harbors malicious intent toward us, one who is a tyrant, not seeking to impart freedom, but to selfishly take it away. But as we observe God's principles at work and the methods He used to bring the human race into existence, we see a strong argument against the claims of Satan. Had God intended for Adam and Eve not to be free, would He really have given them an opportunity to reject Him by placing the tree of the knowledge of good and evil in the middle of the garden? In fact, that tree was so important in establishing their freedom that He put it right in the middle of the garden. He could have planted it on the opposite side of the globe, or somewhere just barely visible from the outer edge of the garden. But he didn't. He planted it right in the middle. A crucial principle was on display at the tree, and he did not want the human race to miss it. God knew that sin, by its very nature, would take away our ability to choose that which is best for ourselves, that it would end up giving us the mind and attitude of a slave. To protect us from this condition of the mind, he placed the tree of the knowledge of good and evil in the middle of the garden, right in the path of Adam and Eve. It was as if God were saying to them, "I don't want you to be in ignorance of the freedom I have given you." And pointing to the tree, he could say, "See, you are truly free. And here is the place that demonstrates your capacity to exercise that freedom." What wonderful evidence God gave us to show that he is not interested in slavish servitude, but in our freely given trust, based on the evidence he has provided. Evidence that reveals a God not hiding things and manipulating our affections, but a God who is open and honest about the dangers of sin. A God willing to give his own life in order to give us the freedom to choose him again. Slavery. How did we get here? The Bible documents our tragic slide into slavery, fear, and doubt. It all began with Adam and Eve munching down on the forbidden fruit. Eating that fruit was wrong. And beyond being a mere disregard of God's warning, it signaled that a much deeper tragedy had occurred in our psyche. We didn't eat that fruit just because it looked good. We ate it because it came with an idea, a self-flattering, self-empowering idea that maybe God didn't know what was best after all, or worse, that he did know and was withholding something that would be to our improved existence. "Did God really say?" was Satan's insidious question. "Surely he didn't really mean that," was the implication, and the tree that was planted to secure our freedom became the path by which we entered into slavery. As the fruit entered our stomach, the lies about God entered our minds. And in one afternoon, trust and admiration for God were replaced by distrust and fear of him. I can almost hear the plaintive call of God as he paced through the gloomy shadows of the garden that evening. "Adam? Eve? Where are you?" To this day, we still hide like runaway slaves in the bushes and cower in fear, perhaps even shaking our fist in disgust at the tyrant we believe God to be. We have a hard time seeing him as the loving and trustworthy father that he is. Instead, we battle with our vision, which seems so easily clouded by the satanic lies we have accepted as the truth about God. In the words of Paul, we have exchanged the truth of God for a lie. So without a good God to turn to, sin lures us in, sings us to sleep, and ties us up with its strong cords. A snake on a pole. As the Israelites wandered through the wilderness, they encountered many hardships as the result of turning from God. On one such occasion, an infestation of deadly snakes attacked the camp, and many of them died. Moses was instructed by God to make a fiery serpent out of bronze and hang it on a pole so that anyone who looked on it might be healed and live. Since God uses analogies throughout the Bible to demonstrate spiritual truths, it's not too great a leap to see that the snakes represented sin and that being bitten by them represented the consequences of turning away from God. What's a little more challenging, though, is how God chose to demonstrate the cure. In essence, when Moses upheld the bronze snake on a pole, he was symbolically holding up sin before the people. And as the dying gazed up at sin, they were healed. How could it be that the curse would become the cure? Paul says in 2 Corinthians 5:21 that he, God, made him, Jesus, who knew no sin, to be sin on our behalf. In other words, when Jesus was lifted up on the cross, he became sin. He became the snake on the pole. This causes me to pause in silent wonder. What was happening at the cross? Why did Jesus have to become the snake, the very symbol of evil? From tree to tree, God's plan to restore our freedom. At the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, Satan called into question the motives of God. He assassinated his character by accusing God of lying to Adam and Eve about death being the consequence of sin. Adam and Eve believed the lie and fell into fear and distrust of God. And as members of the human race, we are born with the same tendency. We are in a dilemma of monumental proportions. The only one who can restore us and heal us from sin, the one who stands ready to give us back our freedom, is the very one we tend to run from in fear. A physician can only heal the one who entrusts himself to his care, and God can only help us when we come out of the bushes and entrust our souls to him. God designed that the cross of Jesus should shatter the lies of Satan and establish God's righteousness. Paul was moved by the evidence of the cross to say this, "For I am not ashamed of the gospel, for it is the power of God for salvation to everyone who believes. For in it the righteousness of God is revealed." The cross is God's righteousness revealed over and against the lies of Satan. The truth revealed in the cross is the power that unseats all of Satan's false charges about the character of God, and when trusted, returns to us the freedom God has wanted us to live in all along. God, through the tree of knowledge of good and evil, shows us that he respects the dignity of our freedom to choose, and through the tree of the cross, he wins back our freedom. We see revealed in the cross a love so deep and profound that he who knew no sin would be willing to be made sin and die the eternal death of a sinner that we might receive life and freedom from him. Jesus' voice is just as clear as it has ever been. He's calling us out of the bushes. He's imploring us, forget about those flimsy fig leaves you're trying to hide behind. I don't care about your tattered clothes, sordid past, and unstable present. You're dying. Please just come out and look. Look up. I myself have been lifted up. Look. Nothing else matters now. Chains can no longer hold you. Walls can no longer keep you in. Keep looking at me. I can get you into friendly territory and heal you. I died for your freedom. This is the truth. The truth that will surely set you free forever.